Thanks, Jay. My talk is going to be on the applied side of bioavailability and particularly on biochar, which is becoming quite an interesting topic at the moment, and this whole session, I think, this afternoon on biochar. So what I want to share with you is some of the work which we have been doing on sorption and bioavailability of pesticides in biochar-amended soils. By way of outline, I would actually have a couple of slides to show why we are so much interested in biochar at the moment, what is the main motivation, and then look at the implication of biochar addition to the soil, to sorption and desorption of pesticides, plant uptake from bioavailability perspective, biodegradation, and efficacy of herbicides. And particularly the last point is what's driving our current interest in biochar pesticide interactions, some conclusions, and also a slide on what some of the questions are emerging from the recent research. Now, this is a slide from Johannes Lehmann's Nature papers some time ago in 2007, which is basically trying to articulate the benefits of biochar to the environment in general. So the four pillars underpinning biochar as a technology and for application to the soil is basically primarily driven by carbon sequestration, so the pool of carbon in biochar not being so labile as a normal pool. And then at the same time enhances agricultural productivity through many different aspects, particularly things like soil water retention, nutrition ability, cation exchange capacity, and various other things, probably microbiological aspects which are not well studied at the moment. There's also production of bioenergy at the time of when you, through pyrolysis, producing biochar, you could produce syngases and bioenergy. And also, if the biomass source is from waste, you could utilize that as a waste management opportunity. So it's basically these things together making biochar as quite an attractive option in this era of climate change mitigation strategies and very difficult difficult solutions to the problem, if you like. This is seen to be as an easy thing to do. And for that reason, there are such slogans as black magic or black is the new green and all that. And it's all driven from the observations coming from the Amazonia, where preta soils, where the native Indians has been producing charcoal and putting in the soils and oxisols. Among oxisols, these are fertile patches, char-amended soils, compared to the soils which otherwise are not so fertile. So there's a lot of interest in biochar. I guess some time ago there was this discussion going on here in Congress about examination of biochar as an emerging concept to mitigate climate change, and also our media in Australia has been looking at that. In fact, Carbon Farming Initiative is one of the strategies which is being considered in Australia, and we recently, only about a week or so ago, the carbon tax has been introduced in Australia. So there's a lot of considerations of these sorts of strategies. What we were interested was the biochar application to the soil would have implication for pesticides with respect to environmental fate of the compounds, organic compounds. Also, as from a remediation perspective, in some of the contaminated soils you could probably utilize, and this has been talked about before, and some of the cultures where combustion materials, ashes, and not necessarily purely biochar has been applied into the soil simply because of waste disposal and gaining the nutrient value, for example, in China and India. And lately, our interest from herbicide efficacy in char-amended soils, because that has an implication. If this becomes a practice or is promoted to be an attractive option, then there has to be some of the questions such as herbicide efficacy to be seen. This is a slide from one of our earlier work where one of the PhD students working with me, Riaz Ahmed, looked at soils from different regions. They were from soils he brought from Pakistan, from Australia, from UK long-term trials at Rothamsted. And we were interested to see the carbon chemistry link. And with these set of soils, he found a link of the sorption of a couple of pesticides. We looked at the sorption coefficient normalized with organic carbon was still increasing with the aromaticity of the soil, and here the aromaticity was measured through the cross-polarization technique of NMR. And so based on that result, we were expecting always that chars, when you look at biochar materials, they are highly aromatic material, so you expect them to be having extraordinary ability to absorb pesticides. So for that, we did a study a few years ago where we looked at a couple of different types of biochar produced at different temperature, because the characteristics of biochar is going to be a function of not only biomass, whether it's a woody or grassy material, but how you produce it, what temperature. So we thought we'll compare a couple of temperatures, and from a gum tree, eucalyptus wood chip, and produced under lack of oxygen at those temperatures. Then we characterized those materials with pore size distribution and specific surface area through the BET nitrogen. And we amended an alfisol, one of our local soils, with these two chars, and at different rates. And maximum at the moment, we are looking at about 10 tons per hectare, about 1%, so that sort of level. And then we chose deliberately a model compound, diuron herbicide, which is a sort of like not affected by pH, being a non-ionic compound. So this work from 2006, published in Journal of Food Chemistry, firstly looking at these materials, when you go such high temperature at 850, which is not necessarily the currently sort of recommended level of temperature, but we were looking at different materials, you're essentially reconstituting these materials. You have a very narrow pore size distribution, and essentially the pore width was about 0.5 nanometer. And specific surface area, very high specific surface area at that high temperature. On the other hand, the more normal sort of temperature, which is being promoted at the moment for biochar production, is in the 400-450 degrees centigrade range. You have a sort of diffuse distribution of the different size pores. You still have predominantly about 1 nanometer pores with a much lower specific surface area. So these two materials are expected to have very different properties. This is just an example from that work, which is basically showing sorption and desorption isotherm of diuron in soil amended with different amount of biochars. So, for example, this is the right at the bottom here, we have the soil as is without any amendment with biochar. And in that case, although it's not very visible, but we had a reversible sorption isotherm of diuron, so it was not showing hysteresis. Progressively, as the biochar content increased, two things started to show up. One, the non-linearity, which has been talked about earlier today, also how the non-linearity link with the, or relationship with the aromaticity of these material being highly aromatic. So progressively, the isotherm shapes change, but more importantly, not only the amount absorbed increased markedly, but also the desorption hysteresis became much more stronger. In other words, the binding was quite effective, and the release behavior was strongly influenced by the presence of the biochar. With the 450 degree temperature biochar, it was a similar behavior, but the extent of that was much smaller. So 850 was much more highly absorptive. Now, what we did was, our interest was at that stage to actually see whether some of these materials could be applied in conditions where vegetable production systems, which are grown, or vegetables being grown in contaminated soils, and this was the work done by Jiangyang Yu, who came from Nanjing to work with us, and they were looking at situations where could you apply this material in the fields so as to lock the pesticides and reduce their bioavailability and therefore the uptake. So we were particularly interested from that perspective. So we looked at two soil-applied insecticides, in this case, chlorpyrifos and carbapuron, which was among some of the insecticides which are being picked up in the residue in crops from some of those soils in China. So we looked at, obviously, from sorption-desorption point of view of these two pesticides, but more importantly, degradation in soil. So that's a reflection of the bioavailability to microorganisms and pesticide uptake by plants, so the phytoavailability. So that was the sort of two ways to look at the bioavailability component. So what we did was the same Alfisol, we amended with the biochar to different level up to 1%, and the two insecticides deliberately chosen to be slightly different in properties, chlorpyrifos being more hydrophobic than carbofuran, and the solubility difference is quite marked. While chlorpyrifos was 2 mg per liter, carbofuran was much more. But they were both soil-applied insecticides, and for it's important from that point of view because you are essentially applying biochar to the soil, so the implication is predominantly going to be for the pesticide which are applied to the soil. So here we grew a crop, spring onion crop, for 35 days and looked at the residues of chlorpyrifos and carbofuran in the plant parts, both in the above ground and below ground, as well as the residue remaining in the soil after that period of time. So this is firstly looking at the residue of carbofuran, for example. Here on that, we have residue in soil in milligram per, so that's basically against the soil, controlled soils with and without plants, so the maroon color with the plant and green with plants, green with plants and the pinkish color with no plant. And progressively you see 450 degree, 400, the char which is produced at 450 and the char which was produced at 850. So if you look at compared to control, particularly say this highly zoptive material sitting in the soil locking the pesticides, your residue left in soil is much higher. So you have far more residue left. This is extractable, and although recovery is not so high as it would be with the soil, but it's reproducible. And so compared to the control, you could see a huge difference. 450 was same trend, but not as effective as 850. And in all cases, you could see in the presence of plants, the pesticide was degrading faster. And there could be many reasons for that. But overall, the main message from this slide is that the residue in char-amended soils were a lot more left after 35 days compared to a soil which is not amended. The question is whether this residue is bioavailable or not. So in one way, it's not bioavailable because it's hanging around longer. But from the point of view of plants, it will be interesting. The story with chlorpyrifos is essentially similar, a little bit more prominent in case of chlorpyrifos with the 850 degree C biochar, but essentially, generally speaking, similar trend. So summarizing the residue left in the soil, the control soil, we are talking about 88-89% of carbofuran chlorpyrifos is degraded from that soil, or lost from that soil. We basically don't know exactly what transformations or loss has happened. But in the presence of, say, 1% 450C biochar, you're down to 70-80%. In case of chlorpyrifos, the loss was slightly reduced. But in the case of 850, you're really reduced it to from 90% to something like 55%. So there's a lot more residue left in the soil. And as I said, the question about, and that was our main interest, is whether that residue is actually going to be picked up by plants or not. And so here we are looking at phytoavailability and looking at pesticides in the leaves, essentially, of the two insecticides from the control soil against increasing content of the two biochars. So the 450 and 850, and you could see, particularly when you look at 850 in case of carbofuran, the amount taken up by the plant is reduced so significantly in the presence of the biochars, particularly at 1%. And this is despite the fact that these were the treatments where there's a lot more residue is present. So compared to the control, it's basically showing that both from the point of view of breakdown through microorganisms, that bioavailability, as well as the plant availability, is both influenced strongly because of that binding and lack of release. Now, when you look at the below ground parts, there's a lot higher concentrations in the plant parts, and in fact, the role of the biochar became even more prominent in binding and reducing the availability for the plant parts to take up the pesticides. So basically that led us to then think about the implication for the current promotion of biochar as a agronomically beneficial tool, enhancing soil fertility, and all those benefits which we've been talking about. But the question we asked was that given the ability of the biochar to strongly zob soil-applied herbicides, what are the implications of freshly applied biochars for binding these herbicides, and do you have to apply twice or much more times than the normal application rate? And so what is the role for herbicide efficacy? So we looked at deliberately two different mode of action of herbicides: atrazine, which is slowly taken up by the plants, effect photosynthesis, and works sort of like in a period of time. Triflurane, on the other hand, is much more zobed, much more localized, and the effect is more on the root tip and mitosis, and it affects a little bit on the germination side of things as well. So these two different chemistry of the herbicide with respect to mode of actions and also their chemical properties so as to interact with soil and biochar differently, we thought would give us an idea of how the biochar is going to influence. So this time we took a wheat straw biochar because this is being promoted at the moment in Australia and some other places, that the ample supply of biomass such as wheat straw produced at moderately high temperature of 450 degrees C, and using that biochar, whether the herbicide application rates would have to be adjusted because of that. So what we did was we had treatments, no herbicide, with half the rate of application, which is recommended rate twice and four times the recommended rate. So we basically thought by going to four times, we would have covered the situation, and looked at two soils, a ferrosol from New South Wales, acidic, 4% organic matter, calcarosol from South Australia, and a lot of our soils are alkaline, highly alkaline. Some of the soils from California are probably similar, and a lot less organic matter. And in this case, we used annual ryegrass, and annual ryegrass as a weed, mainly because these herbicides are applied for, are recommended for annual ryegrass control. But two, annual ryegrass is also a weed which has got a strong resistance problem in Australia. So we looked at biomass and residue of the pesticides. And this time we took the approach of actually a dose response curve where these different rates of herbicides and the biomass produced, and then try to work out as a tool, which normally weed scientists do, is with the GR50, like what is the concentration of the herbicide or rate of herbicide which will reduce the biomass to half. So we use that tool. But firstly, looking at these atrazine dose responses curve to annual ryegrass shoot dry matter per pot, you could see firstly that biochar, by adding biochar, you're producing a lot more biomass. But nevertheless, the application of the herbicide is progressively in 1% biochar. So where if you're looking at the dose response and reduction in the growth in the control soil compared to the biochar 1%, there's a huge implication and a bigger role for calcarosol. And compared to ferrosol, the calcarosol was producing a lot less biomass. It was a slightly less fertile soil, but nevertheless, the effect or the nature of the effect was similar. Then looking at triflurane, the effect of the biochar on triflurane was was not as significant. In fact, it was a lot less effective in reducing the availability of trifluralin or impact on weed control for trifluralin than atrazine. And part of the reason is because biochar is dispersed in this soil, is mixed and in the pots as we grew the plants for number of days. Trifluralin, because of its very low solubility, is essentially staying put and not really interacting as much. On the other hand, atrazine in those pots is still available, mobile, and has to work through the plant by uptake in a period of time. So it had a lot more opportunity to interact, and also the plant was slowly going to respond to the accumulated residue of atrazine in comparison to trifluralin, which was a much more direct impact. So in both cases, trifluralin for both soils was not so affected by biochar as was with atrazine. There was some effect, but not so strong. And we also looked at the end of the day, the residue of herbicide left in soil at 2 weeks and 4 weeks in the three rates of biochar in two soils. And you could see that where there was more biochar, obviously, there was more residue, and although some of the error bars are quite horrendous, but nevertheless, there is the role of that biochar in reducing the rate of loss of atrazine. In case of trifluralin, the effect of biochar in residue terms was also not so significant at both cases, so it was essentially no significant difference between the treatments. But more importantly, probably, is the dose which you require now to apply to the soils which have been amended with biochar is the critical question. And so, for example, looking at atrazine where there is a predominant effect, with the controlled soil GR50, which is the amount of or the application rate of herbicide which will reduce the growth of the annual ryegrass to 50% of the biomass, required 1.17 kilograms compared to the 4.16. So you're basically looking at something like 3.6 times more herbicide required for the same amount of control. And in case of ferrosol, similar but slightly lesser. But the contrast was actually between atrazine and trifluralin, as I said. There, the increase of the dose required for the control was essentially non-significant, particularly in calcarosol, between the three treatments. So it shows that the effect of biochar in binding, reducing the efficacy, and therefore requiring greater rate of application of the herbicide for the same control of weed is much more dependent on the chemistry of the herbicide as well as nature of the biochar. So in summary, we know that biochars are efficient sorbent of pesticide, and particularly because they reduce the rate of release of the herbicide so much. And bioavailability, both from microorganisms' point of view, leading to slower degradation and therefore residue buildup. But probably more important is the potential implication for herbicide efficacy. It seems that at least freshly applied biochar in soils would require to have application rates or recommended rates of herbicide application need to be adjusted for the soil type and properties and depending on the chemical. So I guess the full agronomic and environmental implications of biochars are yet to be established, although there's a lot of papers, a lot of work published in literature which promotes the beneficial side of the biochar at the moment, but there needs to be a bit more holistic or balanced approach. So there's review which we have published in this current issue of Advances in Agronomy, which tries to sort of put together these different aspects of biochar applications. What are the agronomic benefits, but there are some unintended consequences of biochars as well. So just final slide on highlighting what are the implications for the reduced efficacy of biochar is going to be a question which has to be addressed properly before the biochar technology can be fully sort of supported, if you like, as a way to carbon sequestration and other benefits. Question remains, is the behavior what we have seen in the lab is going to be in the field? and how long this adjustment of the rate of herbicide would be required under the field conditions, because it's going to age in the field. These materials are so highly reactive with the soil, so the organo-mineral interactions in the soil are going to be rapidly occurring, which would have implications for their efficacy impact, and whether we could tailor or change the method of application. So with that, I would like to acknowledge some of the colleagues who have contributed over the years, Guangguo Ying from Guangzhou Institute of Geochemistry, Jiangyang Yu from Nanjing, Subir Nag from Indian Council of Agriculture Research, and some of my colleagues who are currently working on the biochar project. Thank you very much for your attention.